Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Starting with Antonio Brown. Starting with the notion that an arbitrator ruled against Antonio Brown in his grievance with the NFL over the right to wear that helmet. The helmet. You know, that means that whatever ancient helmet that he wanted to wear in-game, he is not going to be allowed to wear in games because the grievance went against him. The arbitrator ruled against him. No way. Hey, look, I'm no lawyer. I've got no legal background, but I really, really thought that dude had a great argument to make. And if that blows your mind, and it blew mine, check this out. Not only did the arbitrator rule against him, not only did the arbitrator rule against letting him wear a helmet that nobody else in the league gets to wear or is even fighting to wear, come to find out, Antonio Brown is not going to retire. No way. Yeah, I said it. Antonio Brown is not going to leave $30 million on the table because they will not let him wear his preferred 10-year-old helmet. Damn, Mr. Big Chest.
Mr. Big Chest.
Dude, just knocked the world off its axis. Up is down, day is night. The hell are you doing, NBC? My man, I bought in. Hook, line, and sinker. Man, you hook me. I really thought you were all in on this helmet thing. I mean, weren't you the dude that tried to sneak onto the practice field with that banned bucket? And when the team told you to take off that helmet, weren't you the same dude that tried to repaint that yourself so nobody would know that you were actually still wearing the same helmet? I mean, come on, man. Weren't you the dude who only a few days ago was threatening to walk away from the game because you felt so passionately about playing with that old helmet? What happened to taking a stand? A stand against, you know, player safety. The fact that you had only suffered one concussion your entire career playing in that helmet. What happened to that stand? What happened to your willingness to leave all that money on the table in the name of principle and playing with that ancient bonnet? What happened to all that? What happened to you saying that it was about the principle? I don't know, man. If it sounds like I'm rattled, it's because I am. I mean, dude, if we can't believe in you, who or what the hell can we believe in? I mean, I've got to know. So, of course, I went to his Instagram feed, and AB tried to explain himself. Quote, "While I disagree with the arbitrator's decision, I am working on getting back to full health and looking forward to rejoining my teammates on the field. I'm excited about this season. Appreciate all the concerns about my feet. Hashtag always a fight. Hashtag represent. Hashtag it's bigger than me." And then he even included a foot emoji in case you weren't clear. So in other words, having seen that, what you mean is the implied threat of retirement was not real. You were simply playing poker. You never intended to leave even a nickel on the table, much less $30 million. And retirement, especially over something that stupid, was never, ever a possibility. No way. Damn, dude, you really had me going. I really thought that you felt so strongly about that, you were going to go all Craig McTavish with it and play without a helmet altogether if they weren't going to let you rock yours. So, if it's not about the helmet, what the hell is this all about? Wait a minute. Were you running a little misdirection? Was all of this a distraction just to keep people from looking at your nasty, crusty, frostbitten feet? Maybe. Possibly. Probably. In other words, if getting frostbite in the summer in France is the worst look and the dumbest thing ever, what do I do to get them to look away and focus on something else? Well, I know. I'll threaten to retire if they don't let me wear my ancient helmet that the manufacturer stopped making in 2011 and that the NFL is It's almost as stupid as getting frostbite in the summer in France, but it'll probably get them to stop focusing on that. In the meantime, just to make it look good and to make it look like it really is about the helmet, I'm just going to explore this loophole, which says that if I can find the same helmet or the same make of helmet that is less than 10 years old, the league might actually let me wear that. Which means that theoretically, there's now a massive search going on around the country for a very particular helmet in a very particular size that was manufactured between 09 and 11. And maybe if they find it, and if Antonio Brown likes it, and he can paint it up, maybe he'll get to wear it. Or maybe, hear me out on this, maybe this notion is way the hell out there, but maybe, possibly, dude, you could just, I don't know, do what every other player in the NFL is doing, and just get used to the new helmet. You know, I'm not wanting to minimize the fact that changing a helmet is a big deal for some guys. And if you're running a route and you're looking back for the ball, it can throw you off a little bit if your field of vision is different because of a new helmet. But it's like anything else, like a new phone, like a new laptop, like a new anything. You have to get used to it. And you'd really think about getting used to it if the new equipment is better and safer than the old stuff. But again, let's not get too far off the point. How much of this is about the helmet? And how much of this is about the fact that his feet are all jacked up? How much of this about him sitting out has been because he can't wear the helmet that he wants? And how much of this is about the absurdity and the ridiculousness of getting frostbite in the summer in France? Oh, because you didn't throw on the right shoes before getting into a cryo chamber, something you've probably done 100 times before. I'm guessing it's about the latter. I'm guessing that, yeah, he'd probably like to wear the other helmet. But a lot of this is about creating a distraction and a misdirection about his feet. Because if we weren't talking about the absurd issue with the helmet, we'd be focused exclusively on the absurd issue of his feet. We'd be talking about a guy who has frostbite on his feet in the summer. And not just a guy, but a guy who makes his living with his feet. That's his moneymaker. They're valuable as hell. Antonio Brown's feet and hands are amazing. They're the kind of things that you get insured by Lloyd's of London. You take care of them. You do not go jumping into negative triple-digit temps without proper protection. Or maybe you do. And then you get frostbite. And then the skin on your feet starts to dry up, and it cracks, and it comes off in huge chunks. And then you generate a controversy over a helmet to shift the focus away from your frostbitten feet. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, bottom line, Antonio Brown is not retiring over a helmet. He was never retiring over a helmet. Nobody ever thought that he was. Leaving $30 million on the table? Psst, please. My man wasn't going to leave 30 cents on the table over that helmet. So now we can go back to focusing on his nasty, disgusting, jacked up, dead skin riddled, coming off in sheets, feet. You know, the stuff that really matters. I can't wait for later today when he strolls back into camp in Napa, and instead of dropping in on his balloon, he's got his pegs propped up on a wheelchair with his new moniker. Float like a butterfly, freeze like AB.
Mr. Big Chest.
Float like a butterfly, freeze like AB. Of course, we're joined by Mike Gundy. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you, Mike?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
My man, before we start talking about your team and your season, I want to say first a happy belated birthday to you. How's life? How are you doing? Bring me up to date.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, with social media, it's pretty much impossible for that day to get by without somebody bringing it up. But I'm good. You know, I'm just finished up doing some farming here since before I got back to work, and got the farm all in order, and now we're back at it, chasing my kids around. You know, I've got a one in college, but then I've got a 17 and a 14 that are playing high school football and baseball. So between that and the farm and trying to get these guys ready to play a game, I'm staying pretty busy, but it's good stuff.
Summer's heat can be draining on your vehicle's battery, and rising temps can cause battery fluids to evaporate. So stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts right now and have your battery tested free of charge. If your battery does need to be replaced, The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts will help you find the exact superstar battery that fits your car or your truck at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Mike Gundy joining us. I'm going to ask you about the kids in 1 minute, but Mike, this notion of farming, exactly what does that entail? Are we talking about milking cows, something else? What are you doing on the farm?
We are raising high-quality, high-protein Bermuda hay for horse farmers. So last year we cut about 300 round bales, the large round bales, and the horse farmers like it because it doesn't have any weeds in it. It's got almost a 15% protein rating, which is really good. So we grow that. We usually get two, sometimes three cuts a year. And then we've got a lot of animals that we're breeding. We breed some miniature longhorns. We breed some miniature Scotty cows. We breed some alpacas, miniature donkeys. So we got a lot going on out there. Kind of keeps us all sane.
I'll tell you what, the farm life sounds great. I think I need some of that. I like that a lot. Mike Gundy joining us. Now, Mike, for more than half your life, you've been playing or coaching at Oklahoma State, which is an amazing stat in and of itself. And the impact you've had there is obviously pretty remarkable. If we were to go back to when you were playing there, and if I were told you then that you spent a huge part of your life, a big chunk of your life, what would you have said? Would you have believed me at that time?
I would not have. And it's, you know, it's interesting, two things. So, since 1986, other than 5 years of my life have been in Stillwater, which that surprises me. And then the other thing was when we started the season a couple weeks ago, I started adding up on my fingers how many years I've been an assistant coach, and I just realized this is my 30th year. So I called my mom and asked her if she knew it had been 30 years, and she said she thought it was 20. So I have been here a long time, Jim, and fortunate that the people haven't run me off yet.
Hey, Mike, your point about your mom thought it was 20 when it was 30, I do that all the time. Like, do you ever have points of, like, I can't account for those 10 years? Or remember those 9 years we lived there? I mean, it's really a scary notion. Like, how do you lose track of 10 years?
I'm trying to figure out what happened to the last 25 years of my life, to
right.
be honest with you. But I know I had fun while I was doing it. I just don't remember what happened to all of them.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Mike Gundy joining us. Now, I can run down a list of achievements since you've taken over as head coach, but the simplest way of saying it is that there was Oklahoma State before you got there, football, and then there was Oklahoma State football after you got there. You know, to the point, back in the day, a season that ended with a bowl win would have been a cause for celebration, but you made the point that last year was something of a disappointment. You did a lot of self-scouting, a lot of self-evaluating. When you did that self-scouting, Mike, what did you learn?
I was deficient in a lot of areas, Jim, and the best illustration for it is, like, I have three boys at home, and the little one gets away with way more than the other two did, just because at some point you get a little tired and you're like, he'll figure it out. I'm not going to worry about that. I when I went back and looked at myself, that's what I had done. We had won so many games the last 6 or 8 years. And had really, really good players and had mature quarterbacks, and we were squared away. And I just let little things slip by in practice, and essentially it was a lack of discipline. And then we became a soft football team after that. And when I sat back and looked at it, I studied it for several weeks in the late winter, in February and March. And I realized that, you know what, probably 75% of the losses we had last year were because of me. And the other 25 was probably the assistant coaches and the players. So we came up with a good plan, and we've taken a very disciplined, hard-nosed approach. We're attention to the detail, trying to get it instilled in the players. And so far, over the last 2 weeks, we're off to a pretty good start. And it should show up some in the games. We had a lot of dumb penalties, face masks, late hits, missed assignments, just things that we can't do at Oklahoma State in order for us to have a double-digit win season.
Mike Gundy joining us. What a candid response that is, Mike. I appreciate that, and I respect that a lot. One of the things you've talked about also is, and it's clear, how last year energized you. So rather than talking about the quarterback battles and the time frame of that decision, what's the mood like among the players right now? Are you seeing what you want to be seeing from the team as a whole?
Yes, and we're pushing them hard right now with the, as I mentioned, the discipline and toughness. And so they're sore right now and they're tired, but we're pushing hard. And our staff, they have to really work. I told them in the staff meeting early this morning that right now is when we get tired as adults, and then they watch us, they see us set back a little bit, and they'll set back. So they really have to press hard, and the team is buying into it. You know, you try to use a little bit of trickage for them on the mental preparation, telling them that, hey, you guys are lucky that we're working it this hard. You're lucky your coaches are staying on your tail every step of the way. Otherwise, you know, you win seven games like we did last year. So they seem to they're buying into the process, and it should help us throughout the season.
Mike Gundy joining us. Now, Mike, I had Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin in studio yesterday. I know the two of you have connected in the past. He thinks very highly of you. How did that connection first come to be?
Well, he and I are both involved in What Drives Winning, which is a group of coaches across the country that do lectures and motivation, and we share ideas and thoughts, and he's awesome. Obviously, now everybody knows about him, but we knew he was awesome 5-6 years ago, and now he stepped on the stage as, you know, arguably the biggest name in college baseball right now. But the attention to detail, the discipline, the structure, the planning, the focus, he's an A-plus in that category. And he and I stay in touch through text, and we have a conference one or two times a year that we'll be together. But he's big time with what he's done. You know, he's gone into Vanderbilt and completely changed to that university when it comes to baseball.
Mike Gundy is my guest. I agree with you. Now, the other day, you retweeted a highlight from the Steelers preseason game where Mason Rudolph threw a TD pass to James Washington. As a coach, what's it like for you to see your guys living out their dreams in the NFL?
You know, it's special to see them come through here. And most of our players graduate in 3.5 years now, and a very small percentage of them get the opportunity to go play in the NFL. And when they're good, solid young men and they do things right and they go out and have success, it's awesome to watch them. I didn't realize, see, we have 27 guys in NFL camps right now. There's a chance 4 or 5 of those guys could get cut based on, you know, the cuts up through the next 2 weeks. But we might end up with over 20 guys in the NFL active rosters this year. So we've done okay. You know, we're making some strides here. But it's good to see quality people who work hard have success.
Mike, but let me go back to one thing about self-scouting. And I'm glad that in terms of your self-scouting, it did not involve one particular thing, because let me be honest, the most stressful time of the year for me is when you make your first appearance at Big 12 Media Days, because I live in fear of that day that you're going to show up and the mullet is not going to be there. Now, it's hard to imagine you without the mullet. Can you picture yourself ever taking it down?
Not now. I mean, I think it's going to be there for a long time. It's kind of become who I am. And you know, the interesting thing, Jim, is like my players, if I go and trim it every now and then, like they'll ask me, Coach, did you cut your hair? And I said, I have to every once in a while. By now it would be down to the top of my butt. So, I mean, they kind of freak out if they think I cut my hair. So anyway, I don't see it. I kind of enjoy it. You know, it's and you know, we all have things that are kind of who we are, you know, as people and coaches, and even in your profession, you know, you have things that people say this is what Jim Rome is, and that's who he is. And so I don't see it happening at this point.
Man, what a relief. I'm so glad to hear that. And maybe now I can stop asking you about that, because I sweat that every single year. I'm like your players. I feel the same way. Mike, you mentioned your kids, and we've talked about your kids and their athletic success in the past. Your son Gunner is a really good high school quarterback. I'm curious, what's it been like for you watching him grow and develop as a player?
It's been a lot of fun. I enjoy watching the boys play, and Gunner has grown up a lot in the last year. He's really starting to work hard and realize that everybody else at the next level is every bit as good, and it comes down to the work ethic and the discipline and things like that. And I've enjoyed watching him. His class has really kind of changed Stillwater High School football. We only have one high school here in Stillwater, and they went 12-0, and they got beat in the state finals last year by a team that's won, I think, 4 or 5 in a row. I can't remember, but and the last time they were in the state finals was like 1974. So they've really changed the way people think about Stillwater football, and I'm excited about that, and I enjoy watching him do that. And so we continue to watch him in his career, and he can go as far as he wants to go as long as he's willing to put the work in it. My little one, my 14-year-old, he's a freshman, so he'll be on the – he'll play freshman ball and then probably suit up for the varsity games. I guess he's a third-team quarterback now with the high school, and so he's learning and developing, and so it's fun to watch the boys.
Mike Gundy, 15 years as head coach. He was the 2011 National Coach of the Year. And again, they open up their season against Oregon State right around the corner. That's August 30th. Mike, it is always good to have you on the show. Great to get caught up. Thanks so much. Let's do it again before the end of the year.
You bet, Jim. I enjoy you. Always listen. Anything you need, just let me know, okay? Be safe out there.
Neil Brown joining us. All right, so in terms of the culture and the norms that you mentioned, as you start to lay the foundation for the season and for the program overall, what are the types of concepts and ideas that you're underlining to your players about what you want to see from them and in the team?
You know, for this year, we always set very general rules at the beginning. I mean, general goals at the beginning of any when you take over a program. So we're real general. Right now, what we're trying to do is we're trying to establish the way we're going to play. And we want to be a team that plays hard, that plays physical. We want to play as fast as possible. I think the thing that we're really stressing right now is we've got to be a close team. You know, the predictions in the preseason aren't very favorable for us. And what I talk to our guys about is you either prove them right or you prove them wrong. And so we're in the midst of putting together a team that wants to prove those predictions wrong. And to do that, we may not have the most NFL talent in our league, so we've got to be a team that has great team chemistry, and that's something we focused a lot on. And we've got to be a team that doesn't beat itself, and we got to be a team that plays extremely hard.
West Virginia head coach Neil Brown joining us. Now, Neil, there's this perception that it's a tough job for any number of different reasons when it comes to things like recruiting and travel. It's a tough conference, on and on. But when you look at the fact that the program has 750 wins, it's been on the verge of playing for a national or even winning a national title multiple times in the past three decades. What are people missing out on the serious potential there?
You know, three times. You're right, Jim. Good. Very good research. 88, 93, and 2007 either played for a national championship or within a game of being in the national championship game. So, 14th winningest program of all time. And it's a program that's been successful regardless of league. And there's a lot of tradition here. And this was a really intriguing job. There's been a lot of jobs that were open over the last 2 and 3 years since we had our successful run at Troy. But this made a lot of sense for me, native of Kentucky, so geographic fit for not only myself but our family made a lot of sense. I actually like it. People look at us as an outlier in the Big 12, and it is. There is some difficulties when you're traveling. I think there's less so in football, more so in probably basketball and some of the Olympic sports, because you're only traveling 4 or 5 times a year. But I like the fact that we're really not recruiting, Jim, against anybody we play against in our league. And so I think there's some built-in advantages. We play a challenging schedule. We try to schedule at least one or two natural rivalry games out of conference, and that's what we've done, and we'll continue to do that. But there's a lot of tradition here, and there's been teams that have been on the brink of a national championship. And at the end of the day, that's where we want to take this program.
You know, Neil, that point about we're not necessarily recruiting against other programs in the conference, you've made that point that when you compare West Virginia to other schools in the Big 12, that you're different, and that different is good, whether you're selling cars, recruiting players, whatever it is. That's interesting to me. What do you mean by that? Lay that out.
Well, our approach. So if you know where we recruit, we break it down to a primary area and a secondary area. So our primary area is within a 6-hour car ride of Morgantown, and you can get to a lot of places. You can get to Charlotte, you can get most of the state of Kentucky, you can get the whole state of Ohio, you can get to Detroit, you can get up to New Jersey into New York City, you can get the whole state of Pennsylvania, you know, you can get into DMV. There's a ton of football players in that area. Well, so our sales pitch to those players is considerably different than the normal schools recruiting that area, which are in the Big Ten. All right, in the ACC, those are the primary recruiting areas for those schools. Well, in the Big 12, we have a different pitch. For an offensive player, we're the most prolific offensive league in college football. I don't think that can be disputed. All right, and the flip side of that, if you're a defensive player and you like to rush the passer, what better league to go play in than the Big 12? Because you're going to get more opportunities. If you're a defensive back, what better opportunity is out there than to go play in the Big 12 where you know there's going to be more balls in the air? So that's what I'm thinking. Anytime, regardless of what you're doing, if you have an opportunity to differentiate yourself from the people you're competing against, I think people remember things that are different.
I love that. That is so true. Neil Brown joining us. All right, now back in the spring, you had lunch with Don Nealon, legendary West Virginia head coach. What was that experience like?
It was incredible. You know, he did such a tremendous job here. And you talk about guys, you know, he's College Hall of Famer. I think sometimes he's overlooked. But he took over a program in 1980 that was averaging, I think, in the 14,000 range. They didn't have a conference, really struggling. And in his 20-plus years of tenure here, takes on 88, 93 teams we've already talked about. But, you know, 15-plus bowl games. Just an incredible run. I actually had him talk to our team on Saturday, and he's 83 years old, and he acted like he never skipped a beat. He got up there 15, 20 minutes, talked to our team. Our guys enjoyed it. He came out and watched a scrimmage on Saturday. So he's a guy that I want is around our program. His son is our equipment manager. His grandson is one of our analysts here. So there's still a ton of Coach Nealon's people that are in this building.
West Virginia head football coach Neil Brown joins me for another moment or so. Neil, I've got to ask you about your book club, because that is the stuff of legend. In the middle of all this, are you still able to make time to read? And if so, what books have caught your attention of late?
Yeah, I'm still reading. I don't know how you grow unless you do read, honestly. You know, so especially as a head coach, you don't get as much interaction on the road recruiting and stuff like that. So I think to grow from a leader in the coaching profession, you got to be able to read. So the book club book we did this year was Jack Swell's Developing a Leader Within. And I think it's a good book for year one, just because I think for us is, you know, I want to develop our staff as much as we want to develop our players. We talk about being a development program, and I think you got to spend an adequate amount of time developing your staff. So we did that. So I'm reading that. And I just finished a book, Leaders Eat Last. Those are the two books that I've read here in the last few weeks.
Neil Brown, my guest. All right, then. Knowing what you know the last few months, or what they've been like the last few months, and what you've had to do since taking that job, how pumped are you for the season to start and just get some football underway?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Jim, this is why you do it. There's nothing like game day. I think we're going to have some challenges. I think that's anytime you're dealing with the type of schedule we're dealing with. I think we're one of five Power 5 teams that play 11 Power 5 games, so it's a challenge. In our league, I think in our league, the Big 12 is so competitive. You know, I was a coordinator here at Texas Tech in 10, 11, and 12, so I know the league. But it's really competitive. You know, you talk about 1 through 10, there's been a ton of parity in our league, and Oklahoma's kind of risen above. And I think they're the standard for what everybody's trying to get to. But I'm looking forward to it. We've got a young team that's going to improve as we go. There's nothing like a home game here. I think we have one of the most exciting and energetic fan bases, and it's a tough place to come in here into Morgantown and win.
He is the head football coach at West Virginia, entering his first season with the Mountaineers. And again, they open up against James Madison August 31st. Neil, it's really good to have you back on the show. Thank you so much for the conversation. Good luck to you, and I'll look forward to doing it again soon.
Appreciate it. It's always fun to be in the jungle.
Hiring is challenging. We know this. But there is one place that you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter. Send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never ever miss a great match. ZipRecruiter, in fact, is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the very first day. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. Once again, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. ZipRecruiter.com/clones. It's an amazing service. It's a great product. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. But back to contracts, holdouts, guaranteed money. You know, fantastic stuff. Speaking of which, fantastic. In the last couple of days, there have been multiple reports about the amount of money that Dak Prescott has turned down. There was a suggestion a few days back that he turned down somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million per year. And a good chunk of people lost their ish over him turning down $30 million per. You know, like, who the hell does Dak Prescott think he is? He's not that good. Tom Brady does not make that kind of money. Is Dak the dumbest guy ever? Is Dak the luckiest guy ever? Is he both? How the hell is he not immediately reaching for the pen to sign the line that's dotted? Not my reaction, but the reaction a lot of you had. So, you can imagine if that was the reaction to the report that he had turned down 30 mil. You can imagine if that was the reaction that that same crowd reacted to the report yesterday that the reason he turned down 30 mil per is because he's asking for 40 mil per. So the same people that lost their minds when he said no to 30, allegedly, really lost their damn minds when they saw the reason for it, that he wants 40, reportedly. All right, so you know those reports. Now here's a report from me. Here's the news that I would like to break. My report, according to Jim Rome, none of it matters. None of it. I'm not going to question the validity of those reports, but throwing around numbers like that without having any idea of the contract length or the guaranteed money is just pointless. It's a waste of time. I mean, let's start with the basics. $30 million per year that is fully guaranteed is a lot less than $40 million per year that is not guaranteed. And we don't know what is and what isn't. Then we come to the real part of the conversation, the real meaty part, the part where people start saying that Dak is not worth 30 mil, that Dak is in no way worth 40 mil, that if they pay Dak that much money, they're not going to have enough to pay Ezekiel Elliott or Amari Cooper. Let me touch on the last part of that first, the salary cap. It's a joke. The salary cap is a joke. Jerry Jones has more than enough money to pay Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Amari Cooper, whatever the hell he wants to pay them. He wants you to believe that there's not enough money to go around, but he's got enough money. The salary cap is an artificial ceiling that the owners put in place so they can say that their hands are tied and they really can't pay guys what they actually deserve. Fact. But leave that aside for now. Let's leave that for now, and why don't we go back to what you think Dak does or does not deserve. Let's get to the truth about quarterback contracts. What a quarterback gets paid has less to do with what they've done and more to do with when they're getting paid. In other words, it's less about greatness and it's more about timing. As an example, is Carson Wentz a more accomplished quarterback than Matt Ryan? Is Russell Wilson better than Aaron Rodgers? Is Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo, are they better than Drew Brees? Are any of them better than Tom Brady? You see, as a quarterback, being paid is about where the market is when it's time for a new deal, which brings us back to Dak Prescott. I can already hear a bunch of you saying, Dak Prescott is not a franchise quarterback. All right, fair enough. But is Kirk Cousins? Is Jimmy Garoppolo? Look, in 3 years, three seasons, Dak Prescott has an Offensive Rookie of the Year award, two NFC Eastern titles, two Pro Bowl appearances, and a playoff win. When you draft a quarterback, you can't hope for much more than three seasons, which include a Rookie of the Year award, a pair of division titles, and a couple of Pro Bowl appearances. Yeah, I know. One playoff win does not sound like a lot until you consider the Cowboys have won a total of three playoff games since 1996. No, he's not Breeze. No, he's not Pat Mahomes. And maybe he has not taken the big step that everybody thought that he might take after his rookie season. But let's not let great be the enemy of damn good. Let's not lose sight of what the guy has done. Dak is not going to blow you away with these numbers, but try these numbers on for size. Earlier this summer, Carson Wentz signed a deal worth a reported $32 million per year. Dak Prescott has put up better numbers than Wentz since they both entered the league. More wins, more passing yards, more game-winning drives, better completion percentage. The list goes on. Yeah, I know. I know what you're thinking. Dak has more talent around him. Fine. Let's work that out. And this is not about bashing Carson Wentz. He's legit. But Wentz was en route to an MVP caliber season in 2017. Then he tore his ACL. Nick Foles took over. He won a Super Bowl. Wentz came back last year. He went 5-6 as a starter. He missed the rest of the season with a back injury. Foles led the team to the playoffs. So my point is, if Carson Wentz set the market at 32 mil, and Dak Prescott is sitting there with better numbers, better results, and has played every game, why would he take less than Carson Wentz? And that's before we get into the value of having stability at the quarterback position. Are there better quarterbacks than Dak Prescott? Yes. He'd probably tell you the same thing. But where are you going to find that quarterback? Because the Cowboys' record in the last 30 years when it comes to quarterbacks has been Troy Aikman, Tony Romo, Dak Prescott, and a bunch of stiffs and mistakes. Do you really want to bail on Dak Prescott and run the risk of a return to the Chad Hutchinson era? And if you do find that person, is it a guarantee that he'll be better than Dak Prescott, better able to stand up to the scrutiny of being the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and do it for less money? And here's the other question for all of you getting so worked up about Dak and his contract. Why are you getting so worked up about Dak and his contract? It's not your money. It's not like the choice is between paying Dak and paying you. Dak is not taking food off your plate. I guarantee he's not taking it nearly as personal as a lot of you are, and it's his money and not yours. Trust me, if you spent as much time sweating your own paycheck as you did his, your life would be a hell of a lot better. Believe that. Look, bottom line, quarterbacks get paid. Don't hate. Hate the game. Jera, you better pay this guy, or you'll be right back in the Quincy Carter, Drew Henson, Brandon Whedon era before you know it, Jera.
This quarterback, Whedon, can drive the ball downfield. Now, he's a thing of beauty on throwing a football. Frankly, you won't see a more gifted passer.
Frankly. Great take. That aged pretty well. Now, if you're new to the program and there is still some of that vocabulary, some of that vernacular, you may have trouble following along. It used to be that we spoke an entirely different language. Like, if you just dropped in, you'd have no idea what we were talking about. Almost literally every single topic, every single athlete, everybody had gloss. It was really a thing back in the day. It's not like that anymore. But a lot of you, if you just show up, have trouble following certain things. Like, a lot of you have no idea what warring something means. Or a lot of you have no idea who the butter knife is. Or why tweeters and emailers might talk about a place called Bugaha. Point is, the show does, in fact, have its own vernacular. Some of you get it, some of you don't, but if you hang around long enough, you'll figure it out, and then it becomes a second language. The same might be said for gaming and esports, right? Words like noob, pwned. I remember the first time my kids, started talking about people or things getting pwned. Noob, pwned, camper, nuke boosting, universal term, but teabagging, a gamer term, a drinking term, whatever. But it does apply to gamers as well. Lag, dominant online game speak. Now, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be something I'm not. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm an expert. But I know enough to know what all of that means. I also know enough to know that esports is not some flash-in-the-pan fad either. It's not going away. In fact, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Hell, a 16-year-old kid who goes by the handle Booga just pocketed $3 million. For winning the Fortnite World Cup in front of a sold-out crowd at Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York last month. Does that sound like it's going away? A sold-out crowd watched a teenager pocket $3 million for playing video games. My only question is, where the hell was my seven-figure check for dominating Galaga back in the day? When I was turning Defender over, where was my $3 million? How come I didn't get paid for crushing Burger Time? Or Frogger? Or Centipede? Or Asteroids? So one gamer slang word that made headlines all across the internet yesterday was swatting. Swatting. The word swatting was everywhere. It was in articles from CBS Sports, to ESPN, to TMZ, to CNN. All about the aforementioned Fortnite World Cup champ, Booga. Booga was swatted while streaming. So what's that mean? For those of you who don't know, or for those of you who don't have kids who are addicted to Fortnite, and if you have kids, chances are they're addicted to Fortnite. They're kids, right? So if you don't know what that is, a lot of these players broadcast their gameplay matches on the live streaming platform Twitch. So if you're a well-known player like Booga, a ton of people will watch. All right, so just think about that for a minute. If you're really late to this whole thing, not only do guys play, not only do guys play professionally, not only do guys play professionally and get paid if they're really good, people will watch. So this past Saturday, a lot of people were watching Booga play in a 3-on-3 Fortnite match that was interrupted by the latest case of swatting. So what does that mean? What the hell is swatting? Swatting is a felony. Swatting is a criminal harassment tactic where somebody reports a hoax emergency in an attempt to get a SWAT team to descend upon their unsuspecting target. Saturday night, somebody called the police to SWAT the 16-year-old world champion gamer Booga. Let me repeat that for you. Saturday night, somebody called the police in order to SWAT the 16-year-old world champion gamer, Booga. What an amazing sentence that is, right? If that's not the most 2019 sentence I've ever uttered, I don't know what is. Listen to the first clip from the live stream Saturday night as Booga tells his dad that he cannot stop playing, only to turn around to find out that it's not really his dad, it's the cops who are in the room. You hear him realize what's going on immediately and says, quote, "I got swatted," before he leaves the game while his other two teammates who were not in the same room as him wonder exactly what happened.
Dad, I actually can't.
Stuff's coming with you.
I'm out of mouth.
I got
now.
Swatted.
Bruce is literally talking to his dad right now.
Are you? Did he just leave mid-game?
Yes. Yes, bro. He left mid-game. He did. You know why? Because that wasn't his dad. That was a SWAT team. That was the local fuzz. And they were responding to a call that reported. It's unbelievable. The reason that they were in there is because there was a call that reported that Booga had killed his dad and tied up his mom in the garage. The F is that? Who does that? Police told ESPN that after they received the call, they surrounded the residence. They called the home where Booga's pop picked up. He let the officers in. According to the audio later in that stream from Booga himself, the officers went into the room, guns drawn. This next clip is from a few minutes later after Booga returned to the stream to let everybody know what went down.
Yeah, I got swatted.
No way.
No, yeah. Dude, they pulled up, like,
Jesus, dude.
The one officer, he,
recognized you?
Yeah, he lives in our neighborhood. Yeah, dude. Wait. Like, the guy comes in, like, I notice him, and he's just like, yeah, dude, they come in with guns, bro. Like, they literally pulled up. Holy dude. That's scary. The internet's crazy.
Bro, whoever did that can literally go to jail.
Holy dude. Dude, I can't believe someone would actually do that.
Yeah, I can't believe how calm this kid is. You can't believe somebody would actually do that, and I can't believe how calm this kid is. I can't believe how calm that kid is after turning around in his room to find cops with guns drawn. I mean, is that story real? The hell is going on here? Apparently, any idiot can call in a murder kidnapping in progress and get cops to show up at a live streamer's house. And it's not even close to the first time that's happened. Swatting? I mean, I hate to even talk about it. She's only giving the idea to other people, right? swatting has happened to the likes of Ashton Kutcher, Justin Bieber, Kim Kardashian. Well, by the way, side note, when I was in Capri last week, all the rage was the Kardashian yacht had pulled up. I didn't see them. I didn't see it. I didn't go looking for it, but that was all the rage. But in terms of swatting, it's never been a bigger story than it is right now because of who it happened to. And the fact that it happened while he was live streaming in front of thousands of viewers. And of all the audio from Saturday night, the next clip is the most wild of all. Remember Booga left during the middle of the match? He had no idea how it turned out. Or if he had won. Apparently this dude has got some pretty whack priorities.
Wait, we won?
Yeah, we won.
Yes! Yes! That's all I care about. Let's go. Let's go. GG's. GG's. They came in with guns, bro. I'm sitting here and I'm like, wait, one second. Bro, I wanted to win. I'm not trolling.
Wait, what do you mean? They just came in with guns?
Yeah.
Like your parents didn't like lead them in the room? It was just
no, they weren't allowed. Dude, and I was like it was end-to-end game. I wanted to finish.
You wanted to finish. Bro, what about your dad being dead and your mom being tied up? All you cared about was winning. That's the sound of a multimillionaire, 16-year-old superstar, video gamer, losing his mind over winning a game of Fortnite. Minutes after officers came into his room, guns drawn, under the suspicion that he had killed his dad and his mom was tied up in the garage. Priorities, right? I guess you know where you stand, mom and dad. But you talk about an ability to compartmentalize. This kid's something else. Now you know why that kid's the champ, right? An ability to compartmentalize. Never mind that maybe somebody could have been shot. And I don't mean like the report that his dad was dead and his mom was tied up. I mean like when people get swatted, people have been shot. Literally, over something like that. Others have been. But my man, he's not concerned about that. He's concerned about the win. He is locked in. Now, there's an ability to compartmentalize. As for the person who phoned in that hoax, officers believe that the call came from Europe and that the proper law enforcement agencies are currently hunting down that jackass who's going to serve quite a bit of time behind bars if they catch him or her. Esports, more dangerous than the NFL? You decide. On second thought, I'm all right with that. I'm pretty okay with not getting a $3 million check for dominating Galaga if it means the SWAT team is going to run up on me and my stack of quarters at the local 818 arcade. Welcome to the 2019, everybody, where teenage video gamers are millionaires and pretty much unfazed by armed police busting into their room midstream, and especially if they finish and they win. Hey, bro, good news. Dad's not dead and mom's not tied up in the basement. Yeah, but did we win? Yeah, you won. Yeah! How about the fact that you didn't kill your dad and your mom's not tied up in the basement? Did we win?
Yeah, we won.
Yes! Yes!
Man, I gotta tell you something. Ding dong ditching, so 1981. TPing houses, so yesterday. Flaming bag of dog poop on the doorstep? Who cares? Smashing peanut butter all over the windshield of your car? That's whack. Let's go to Pensacola. Casey. Hey, what could go wrong? Casey in Pensacola. What could go wrong? Hey, Casey, what's up?
Hey, Romy, what's up, man? Welcome back.
Thank you very much. How you doing?
I was listening a minute ago, and I heard somebody say that there was a shortage of penicillin when the Kardashian yacht rolled up. What he meant to say was there was a shortage of petersilin, because if they had as many sticking out of them as they had stuck in them, they'd look like a porcupine.
Ah! Alvin, like how long were you going to let that go?
Don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Alvin, do you like working here? I know I do. And you get the sense that if I don't work here, maybe you won't work here? All right, then. It's Casey in Pensacola talking about Anyway, that call, if that call were 10 seconds, it was 9.5 seconds too long.
Good night,